little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
Seattle is my city. I have nothing else. Should have thought of more. All right, final hour of our broadcast week. Got a lot of stuff to get to. I'm so busy. I got so much stuff here. I could easily do a 7-hour show every day, but that would really disappoint people from 3 to 7 when... before I get to John Curley, I got to clean up one thing from the last hour. We were talking about Bill Cosby refusing to take sexual offender training, and he said he'd rather stay in prison. And we played the clip from 50 years ago when he was making jokes about drugging women's drinks with Spanish Fly. And a listener texted in and said, wasn't there a song named Spanish Fly? And the answer, as far as I know, is no. But there was this, Sean DeTore. Spanish Flea by the great Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Herb Alpert, one of my favorite guests ever on the show. Okay, let me bring John Curley in. This seems like good music for John. Keep it going, Sean. John Curley, hello, welcome. Appreciate you coming by. Thank you.
Thanks, Dory. It's nice to be here. And the song you're referring to is Spanish Fly by Van Halen. And here's that song now.
Do they have one?
Here's number 10.
Spanish Flea was the theme song of what television show, John? You should know this.
That would be The Dating Game.
The Dating Game. Let's meet our bachelors. And here they are. Hosted by?
Wink Martindale.
The great Jim Lang.
Jim Lang, who I played golf with Mike West, and Jim Lang had absolutely no sense of humor, and he was all over the course, and every time he would hit the ball off the tee, it would go flying hard to the right, and I would help him try to, I felt sorry for him, so I'd try to find the ball for him, and I'd say, oh, I hit over there too, and here we are. Every time we would all be together in one spot, he never reacted to anything. And he was one of those guys that smoked continuously. I mean, he had a cigarette and he'd throw it down on the ground, hit the ball, pick the cigarette back up again, smoke it all the way through. He was chaining cigarettes. And
really?
And he, at one point, he goes, do I get a stroke on this hole? And at this point, on the back round, I didn't really care to sort of try to be friends with the guy. And I said, Jim, the way you're smoking, I'm surprised you're not getting a stroke on every hole.
Oh, now, man.
What a bomb.
That was good.
But I how many times did I have to go, and here they are. Well, it would just give me something, Jim. Something. Just a little something.
He probably didn't laugh because everybody he's encountered for the last 30 years has probably said that to him.
But not as clever. Putting it in that context.
I understand. Okay. So if you've golfed with the man, how did you think it was Wink Martindale who hosted The Dating Game? This makes no sense to me.
I was too busy looking up Van Halen 2, Spanish Fly, 1.7 million viewers 11 years ago. Sean will have it.
Sean, would you have Spanish Fly ready to go at the end of the segment, please? The song, not the powder. Okay. Wink Martindale, of course, was most famous for hosting what?
Wink Martindale. Oh, he had a couple of dollar ones, and I don't remember what was.
Come on, John. I think it even followed you when you were on Evening Magazine on King 5. Tic Tac Toe.
Ah.
And what was the best thing about Tic Tac Toe, John? Hat Friday. Every Friday, Wink would wear a goofy hat. And he called it Hat Friday. Golly. It was really wacky.
I guess I had a life at that point, Dory, and I don't remember that wacky Friday.
Okay. Did you accidentally just call me Tom?
The greatest insult I could have ever.
Did you really?
It's a habit. And sorry, Wink. I mean,
that's
Dory.
Cold, man. That is cold. Although my middle name is Thomas, so I guess I'll grant you a little mercy.
You did say you could
do
7 hours of radio. I guess this is what it sounds like when you're stretching into
it's
the next.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is fascinating. You called me because I have had a surgery that I think
yes.
you are about to have. And this
yes.
is what happens when you get over the age of 50. And then you wrote to me the other day saying you feel so sorry for Nicole because she has to deal with both of us and our failing bodies.
Right.
Yes.
And I said, I think at times, because Nicole helps you professionally yes. with a lot of things, mm-hmm. and she's my closest professional friend.
Yes.
And I said, at times, I feel like Nicole thinks she's either in a convalescent, between you and me, she's either in a convalescent home or at the Villages.
Yeah.
It's pathetic. Okay, so yes, so I just need to know
yes.
because one of my great sponsors, because mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to get my cataract surgery until late July, mm-hmm. and Dr. Sharp Vision Modern Lace, a great sponsor,
yeah.
They are going to get me in a week.
Uh-huh.
And so I need to know, because I didn't even know this until Nicole told me, that you just had cataract surgery. So what should I expect?
I would recommend, I don't know how your constitution is, but I wanted a more powerful drug. I got a little pill, a little something, and just took the edge off. I needed more of the edge off. They said, would you rather wait till August? We could have an anesthesiologist. I said, no, we've done 30,000 of these. I said, what do most people do? Most people just take a little something just to calm you down.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd had too much caffeine. I was a little anxious because, you know, it's a little scary for the eye. But once I got in there, Dory, I'm telling you, it's over in 5 minutes. And they remove the cataract. They also remove my lens. They put another lens in. And absolutely amazing. I walk out into the hallway, and the cataract is gone. So now my eyesight is bright. There's no more of that smoky thing. All the colors are really vivid. There's absolutely zero pain whatsoever. And it is, you just marvel at modern science. It really is something.
I agree. I just, because I've watched videos on YouTube, and first of all, it's not like it's an extraordinary procedure that you went through and I'm about to. I believe it's the most common surgery in America.
Okay.
I didn't know that
yeah.
until I had a cataract, but it's the most done surgery in America. So, but yeah, I'm getting that lens, new lens. It's going to be like a bifocal lens, so I might
yes.
not need reading glasses.
Yes, it's wild. I have no glasses. I now have 20/20 vision. I wore glasses because I needed it for long distance. Plus, I also think I look pretty smart in them. And I have a series of gestures that I do where I take them off and chew the end and put them back on and pull them down like Chuck Schumer and then make a point, and then sometimes I take them off and shake them at people, or I'll take the arm part and stick the end in my ear and then twist it to pull out earwax. I have a variety of things that I've worked my personality around. Now I got nothing.
You just need some other props now. I don't know what. How about a monocle like Mr. Peanut?
I was Mr. Peanut, and I am never going to be Mr. Peanut again. I was Mr. Peanut in 1982 in New York City, dressed up as gigantic Mr. Peanut, and that's where I met Donald Trump.
Jeez.
That's another story for another time.
Yeah, I'll table that one for now. Okay.
I was going to say this. The costume was made of chicken wire and asbestos, and it must have weighed 400 pounds.
I have tabled the subject. I know you can run roughshod over Tangney, but I've tabled the topic for now, John.
My eyesight has never been better, Dory. I can see everything clearly now.
Johnny Nash, 1972.
Okay,
so bottom line, your main advice is I should take two of the Valium.
I don't know what they're going to give you there.
They're going to give me Valium. They already told me.
Okay, I'll tell you this. I did say, I was just in a T-shirt, and I said, can I have like a blanket? You're going to be off the table in 3 minutes. We can give you something to hold on to. They gave me a stuffed animal, but because they have opened your eye and I didn't want to move my head, I don't know what I was holding, and I was trying to feel it to see what it was. It could have been just about anything. using like an inflatable male doll. I don't know. But I could sense that there was some snickering while I was really hugging this thing tightly. I didn't need to, but just a little bit of comfort. So I would recommend bringing your own stuffed animal.
All right. I respect that. All of that. All right. I'll double up on the value. That's the only thing I'm clinging to. Okay.
It's crazy cool. Yes.
Okay. I can't wait. I really can't wait. It's driving me insane. On a much more serious note, I was very careful earlier today because I was talking about in this major story that we've all been talking about for a couple of days now, Manny Ellis, the three cops charged, two with murder, one with manslaughter. And I talked about that the media narrative has clearly been slanted. And I started to say, you know, I'm one of the onlys who will offer a perspective that, you know, where I'm pretty pro-cop. But I know that you're pro-cop, and Jason Rantz is pro-cop, and, you know, Todd Herman. But I've been really interested in just watching how this narrative is forming around town. And I did not have a chance to hear how you guys covered that story yesterday. Mm.
I wanted to ask Hannah. I basically debriefed Hannah. I heard your take on it. I haven't gotten a really chance to sort of dig in on it. But the bias is already there. To me, it reminds me of some of the horrible stories, and this might be a little bit might be too sort of high, too illustrative to the point. But in the 1920s and 1930s, there was a sense that if a black person possibly could have committed a crime, and even if the person was innocent, there was a bias that was built right in. Practically impossible for the person to be able to get a trial because of the bias, the true racism that existed inside the state, inside the community, inside the United States. There would be cases of the four or five young black men that were accused of raping a young girl, and then she recanted. This is 1928 or something. She recanted, made up the whole entire story, and they still put the guys on trial. And it's like, but. She said it didn't happen. And they put these people on trial. And basically, because if you didn't commit that crime, you committed another crime. You were so guilty by the very nature of your skin. And you are so
horrible.
You are so guilty by the very nature of your occupation. I am deeply, deeply concerned that these three people get, and I'm not pro-cop as much as I am, just pro-truth and fact. And here's the fact. When you hear the mayor of Tacoma last year on the 5th of July or 5th of June say that this was racism, immediately creating that fire, to light that fire, to stoke that fire, and it is absolutely and utterly so divisive, and it destroys the ability for people to be able to look at a fact. So for these three guys, let's let there be a trial. It'll be interesting to see where they hold it, if they sequester the jury, and what changes will be made compared to what they did in Minneapolis.
Well, here's what I guarantee you about where they hold it. I guarantee that the defense attorneys are going to push mightily for a change of venue. And they don't want it in Pierce County. They don't want it in King County. Uh-huh. They would like a change of venue. And I guarantee you that Bob Ferguson will fight tooth and nail to not have a change of venue. Because, and which again, you know, and I'll give you another example. Like when the cops with Rodney King. Mm-hmm. The venue was everything. When it was, I believe it was Simi Valley. I'm just going off the top of my head.
Yes, you're
where it
right.
was a predominantly white jury, and the cops were exonerated. And I read the book that was titled Presumed Guilty by Sergeant Kuhn. It might have been Stacy Kuhn, one of the
That's
officers
right. You're
who was
right.
there.
That's very good.
And he went through the book on elevation of force and when it was appropriate, and it's a fascinating book because these cops were, because of a videotape, it was really the first one. It was the leading edge of when people videotaped an interaction between cops and a black man that just shocked the nation. And then you read how it was an elevation of force, and they presented that to the jury, and they were exonerated. They were found not guilty. And then the family, of course, went for that was a criminal trial against the cops.
Yeah.
Then the family went for a civil trial. They got a different venue, predominantly African-American jury, and the cops were found guilty. And to me, that's so troubling, that where the trial is held might determine if people spend the rest of their life, not just these cops, it happens all the time. If somebody spends the rest of their life in prison, could determine on where a trial is held. And it's also just wafer thin, the difference between having a life that's happy and a life that's awful.
I heard you say something about Bob Ferguson and the governor being political animals, and they are. And do they have the courage to allow the jury to make the decisions to find out guilty or innocent? I think the saddest part of the entire story is, if you think about, if you're a jury member and you're sitting there in that room and you're discussing this and you say, is it worth the fire, the anger, the resentment, the possible assault, murders that could follow? Like in Minneapolis, I can't imagine what was being said inside that jury room, because you realize, listen, it's just one guy. Guys, right. It's one. You know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Just one guy. So it's the question always, if you have seven people, if they're in a closet and there's a baby in the closet and there's somebody outside with a gun and the baby cries, then the guy with the gun's going to shoot everybody in the closet. Do you smother the baby to save everybody? The same sort of thing has to go on some of these situations. You know, it's just one person's life. One person's life compared to everybody else's life. You can't have a judicial system that's based upon that. The reason that Lady Liberty or Justice is blindfolded is because it's just that. It's what are the facts that are before the jury, and the jury makes the decision, come what may, hell or high water. So, listen, for the Manny Ellis's family, it's a terrible, horrible thing to have to lose a loved one. Got it. For society, got it. But when you have the President of the United States just before the jury of Chauvin saying, I hope it's the right decision, and when you have Maxine Waters going to Minneapolis for no other reason other than for whatever reason, Maxine Waters shooting her mouth off, this is a very, very bad thing to have leaders which are supposed to trust that part of our system, which is our judicial system, and you take the power away by second guessing or at least making predictions of what you want it to be. This is a tragic place this country is in.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Bob Ferguson has weaponized the AG's office. There's no doubt about that. By the way, I will say, I'd never heard the baby in the closet thing, and that's one of the most grisly analogies I've ever heard in my life. Smothering babies. What's the matter with you?
It's a hypothetical. It's sort of a thought thing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Play us out here. What we got?
Is it Spanish Fly by Van Halen?
It is, and it's only about a minute long, so get moving, guys.
Coming in at number 7. Dear Casey, has a band ever written a song called Spanish Fly and had it under 2 minutes long? Well, the answer is yes. And here it is now, Spanish Fly by Van Halen.
Tori, you have a choice. You can hear the guitar virtuoso of Eddie Van Halen or John Curley's Casey Kasem impression. Which do you choose? John Curley, you can hear him 3 to 7.
Goodbye.
Every afternoon. 7 to 10.
Dear Casey, 7, settle a bit. Is Tori ever going to go to commercial break? Goodbye.
Have a good show. All right. I got a very move on the subject we were just discussing. I got a very powerful letter from a cop, an email that he sent me last night. I'm going to share that with you right after we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Is the listener submitted song that is set to this song? Is that making the awesome audio of the week today?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to find out next segment.
Yes, we will. It's going to be a big, huge surprise, won't it? But yeah, I didn't realize it was set to this song. The listeners pointed that out. And then also, Nicole, a little disappointed in you.
Uh-oh.
You're supposed to keep me straight. When I was talking about shows that I record, apparently I accidentally said VCR instead of DVR.
Did you?
I got about 100 texts from people. They hate it when I sound that old.
Well, it's funny because you still have a DVR, and I mean, most everything is available on Hulu and Netflix and everything else.
I know, but I don't have a smart TV, and I have to get a Fire Stick for all that. But I'm working on it. But yeah, no, I still like my DVR, and I haven't cut the cord yet. But man, satellite TV, $180 a month for four TVs seems ridiculous.
It does.
Seems excessive. So, yeah, I know it's a DVR and not a VCR. And then also one other text message before I get into what I was going to talk about. Just randomly from the 253, somebody just told me that the owner of Tooltown on Pacific Highway South plays our radio show in the building there at the Biz. So
right,
I just wanted to say hi. I wanted to thank the owner of Tooltown. And if there are any customers in there right now, I want you to spend twice as much as what you were planning to spend, just as a way of saying thank you for listening to the big show on the job there.
Also, pick me up a hammer.
Yes. Ball peen?
Yeah, we'll go ball peen.
Okay. All right. So just get some stuff at Tooltown. And then the other question is that I always wonder, since our show seems to be somewhat polarizing for reasons I've never understood, I wonder if people ever complain about our show being on in a business, which has been one of the big bugaboos for talk radio until we came along, because our ratings have been fantastic and we defy convention. But it was believed for a long time that talk radio would have a tough time in middays in the ratings because there are so many businesses that want to be as non-offensive. So they play like soft music or hits from the 70s and 80s. And that they're, you know, when a customer walks in with one of those portable people meters that compile ratings, it just hears the FM music stations, and that we would suffer in comparison. But we compete just fine with all of them, and I appreciate that. I wanted to share with you a email I got from a police officer who I know about what's happened with Manny Ellis and the attempted murder charges, the second-degree murder charges against two officers, manslaughter against another. And I thought that this was very insightful to give a law enforcement perspective on this. "I have done my best," he wrote, "to read Bob Ferguson's probable cause statement. Please note, my thoughts presented here are not reflective of my position with my department, and I write off-duty in civilian attire on my own computer. My thoughts and opinions as a longtime police veteran officer who is a firearms instructor and has testified on the stand numerous times over my career. I've been involved in numerous legitimate and appropriate force response incidents over my career. I am also CIT 40-hour trained. Yes, as a reasonable society, we should look at actions used by peace officers in the state as whether they were lawful and appropriate. But too often, ill-informed people like Bob Ferguson base their reactions and actions on the training they received, television shows, and inflated news articles, as well as pure political motivation. I would be remiss in saying there are damning things alleged in the probable cause statement. I would also be remiss in not pointing out that Manny Ellis would likely be alive if he had not been abusing dangerous drugs like methamphetamine. I also want to make it clear that I despise bad or dirty cops, and I want them out of my profession. I am not convinced that these Tacoma police officers are that. First, I'll be curious to see how Ferguson renders his arguments against Graham versus Connor, well-established federal case law. It's obvious from the probable cause statement that it is not considered, although there is eyewitness and presumed subject matter expert statements that try to get at this. Ferguson wants to use state law, as it is inferior to federal case law. Sue Peters, the expert in the probable cause, is well known for working in conjunction with lawsuits, despite her career. A search of her name will show several instances over the last decade with her work. Second, without a doubt in my mind, this is political grandstanding by Bob Ferguson, who so desperately wants to be the governor of this state. It is my opinion that this is something he had been waiting for, and as the chief law enforcement officer for the state, the Washington State Patrol is actually under his wing, so their investigation can be called into question, particularly with his known involvement. Politics is politics, even in policing. Ferguson will vigorously fight to keep a change of venue from happening because he wants this circus to happen in areas that are less politically and socially balanced. Third, this action by Ferguson is having and will continue to have a chilling effect on police officer actions throughout the state. Even now, I'm seeing officers hesitate to use appropriate force responses because they do have that thought in the back of their mind at the most critical moments about losing their life and liberty for doing a job so few these days want to do. Using force is often like making sausage. People don't like to watch the entire process, but sure enjoy the end product when it positively affects them. And perhaps that's what Ferguson and his left-of-center ilk want. Less police officers or destroying a system to build up a police force they can have deep control over. Side note, I used to laugh over what I thought were conspiracies about consolidating independent sheriff and municipal police forces under a statewide or national police force. As of late, I'm no longer laughing. Further, ethical, honest, veteran officers like me, who have used legitimate force response, are seeing the writing on the wall and are retiring sooner than expected, depriving the citizens and departments of much-needed seasoned voices. And there's a lot more that he wrote, but it was very insightful, very well done, and I want to share with you the perspective of a cop on what's happening with these Tacoma officers right now. Okay, quick time out, then we'll come down to favorite sound bites of the entire week as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. And down the stretch we come. What a week, what a show, what a show, what a week. And it is that time when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the entire week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
All right. Well, we got lots of them. I got to fly through these babies here. One of them we played earlier today. It's a new soundbite. It just shows that the press corps covering the presidency is a little different now than it was when Donald Trump was president. Joe Biden went to an ice cream shop. And they asked him what flavor ice cream he got. Listen to the press corps. Oh, how giddy they are at his choice of ice cream.
What is your message to Republicans who are prepared to block the January 6th commission?
No, it's the other Biden. Okay, here's the Biden we want.
Mr. President, what did you order?
Chocolate chip.
We're such fanboys. Chocolate chip. Yeah, I don't think we're going to have much watchdogging of government from that crew there. I love this guy. There's a dad in Florida who is sick and tired of the radical agenda taking over his kid's school. And he let the school board know how he feels about it.
One additional comment. The school board recently adopted an equity statement. Why? Your only job is education, not indoctrination. Attention, board members. Our nation is a republic. We are the people. We have a voice. Our votes are our weapons, and we will use them in 2022 and beyond. We in the military, our blood, our sweat is the equity. It is courage, character, not color, not gender, that makes this nation great. Working Americans are united. We are not divided. Stop trying to incite division among us. We are Americans first, and we will be free always.
Yeah. Fired up hearing that, Dad. And I'll say it again, that we're on a very dangerous path for inciting as much racial hatred as possible. The radical left wants to have this critical race theory, the most racist agenda imaginable, in our schools so that kids will hate based on the color of their classmates' skin. And that's what critical race theory is all about. Because understand, for the goals and dreams of the radicals to be achieved, they must first destroy us. They must first divide us. And the more they can do that, and they're starting to indoctrinate our kids in schools. And everybody asks me, Dory, what can we do about it? And that's it. That, Dad, is what you can do about it. So many states have banned this racist curriculum of critical race theory. But even in government, like a big defense contractor, Lockheed Martin, they had a critical race. All their white executives had to attend, and they had to read statements about how evil whites are. And then they had to read statements that black people would say and statements that gay people would say. And it is the most insane nonsense you'll ever see. But what can we do? Go to your school board meetings. If they indoctrinate your kids, you know, I just had one parent who was in his kid's elementary school and said there are Black Lives Matter posters everywhere in the school. And again, the words Black Lives Matter and the literal meaning of that is as true and essential as the air we breathe. Of course, Black Lives Matter. But the movement that's behind it, the Marxist movement, it's all about destroying. Okay, back to our awesome audio. Andrew Yang, he wants to be the mayor of New York City. He ran for president of the United States, and he was catering to his audience by telling them what a huge fan he is of a certain artist.
Do you listen to rap music, by the way? Like, what are you vibing to?
I listened a lot to hip-hop during, like, yeah, the 90s and 2000s because...
What? You know, like, what, Andrew? I gotta know.
Well, it was Jay-Z and... a little bit of Nas. And
what's your favorite Jay-Z song? I mean, he's a New Yorker.
Yes. What is my favorite Jay-Z song?
I guess the pandering will stop here. And then set to the tune of our Friday song, I Remember by Deadmau5. A listener had a song about what he remembers about Seattle. This is Dave Irish. Great listener, great musician.
I remember Seattle in her prime. No blue tarps or graffiti caught my eye. Thank you, Dora, for sounding the alarm. Sad seeing Seattle losing its charm. Remember when safe to walk the streets from Pioneer Square to Rainier Beach? Ride a carousel at Christmas time. Seattle now seen too much crime. Thank you, Dory, for sounding the alarm.
Ah, the wistful past of our city, captured musically. All right, thank you to Dave Irish for that. Thanks to you for hanging out with us for any and all of this week. Tom Curley Show's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. Have a great holiday weekend. Best of Monday. See you Tuesday. High noon. Hello.
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.